Today's sermon is the second sermon in as many weeks that addresses the issue of peacemaking and pacifism as an expression of our faith. And I'm sorry I wasn't here for last week's sermon on peacemaking. And if I say something that Paul Chappell said more eloquently last week, I apologize. But I felt like I wanted to talk about peacemaking today because it seems to me that the month of November gives us two really good reasons to talk about peacemaking. And the first actually happens tomorrow. It is Veterans Day. And Veterans Day in this country is a day when we are encouraged to remember and to honor those who serve in the military, and that's good, that's fine. But I choose to use the day to remember all of the reasons we might not want to send ourselves or our children off to war, there to kill people and their children, or to be killed by them. And I think it is important on Veterans Day to remember that there is no such thing as a war to end all wars. And I say this because outside of the United States, tomorrow is not Veterans Day, but it is Armistice Day, a day to celebrate the end of the First World War at the Treaty of Versailles 101 years ago tomorrow. The end of the First World War ushered in a brief moment of optimism around the possibility that war actually could be ended, that the horrors of the trenches would finally convince humanity that war is a bloody waste of time. And it didn't work, of course, because no matter what you learn, war never leads to peace. War only ever leads to more war. But in my opinion, the idea that we might learn from the horrors of armed conflict, that's a good idea. And it's something we still can do. As far as I'm concerned, it's never too late to learn to reject war. So if Veterans Day or Armistice Day is a good time to think about pacifism, so also is the Feast of Thanksgiving, which is just a bit more than 2 weeks away. And I say this because increasingly I am coming to believe that pacifism should not just reject war, but it should also embrace something, and it should be proactive. And that something embraced and created by pacifism, well, it could be lots of things. But one way that pacifism can be proactive, can embrace, is that we can embrace the kind of gratitude that leads to joy. Today's lesson from Luke is the story of one of the greatest retorts in the history of human literature. There are some folks who want to trap Jesus, and they know Jesus is popular among those who resent the Roman Empire and want to see it removed from the land they consider holy. They also know that Jesus could get in trouble with the Romans and be sentenced to death if he said anything that even smacked of anti-Caesar sentiment. So they asked him, "Should we pay taxes?" And it's a brilliant question, actually. If Jesus said, "No, don't pay taxes," he ran the risk of facing arrest and perhaps execution by Rome. If he said, "Yeah, pay taxes," then he ran the risk of alienating his fan base. So, good question, right? But not so good as the answer. Jesus' response was, and I actually like the King James version of his response best, "Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's," which is to say, give the emperor what belongs to the emperor and give to God what belongs to God. And that had the effect of silencing everyone. It also had the effect of changing the debate for the next 2,000 years, because no longer are we asking, should we pay taxes? Now we're asking a much more difficult question, and that is, what belongs to Caesar and what belongs to God? Now, because I'm a pacifist, I've tried to be a faithful and honest reader of those who are not pacifists, especially when those non-pacifist writers are people whose thinking I admire. And most recently, I've been working my way through an essay by C.S. Lewis called Why I Am Not a Pacifist. And it's about as good a challenge to my beliefs as any as I've read. And when Lewis and others reject pacifism, invariably, one way or another, they come back to the idea that the authority to declare war belongs to Caesar, belongs to human governments. And so when Caesar or any other legitimate earthly ruler declares war, those called by Caesar to fight must do so, for we must render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, or so the argument goes. Now, the earliest Christians, those closest to the writing and to the original reading of the Gospels, they didn't happen to believe that Christians owed it to Caesar to fight the empire's wars. Now, their pacifism tended to be different than mine, but still, when I reject the idea that I have an obligation to send my children off to war at the whim of the president or the Congress, I do so alongside a great cloud of witnesses and in keeping with a venerable tradition within Christianity that, though less prominent these days, still abides among people of faith. Here's the thing, though. Jesus didn't say, only render to Caesar what belongs to Caesar. He didn't stop with Caesar. He also told us to give to God what belongs to God. So I'm not sure it's enough simply to say no to Caesar on the grounds that, for example, human life belongs to God and human happiness is a gift of the Spirit and human communities are a dwelling place for the divine, and therefore to participate in the destruction of human life or happiness or community is to give to Caesar the things that are God's. Of course, I believe that's true. But I also am coming to believe it isn't enough. Even as we reject Caesar's demand for war, we also have to give something to God. And I know that we could come up with lots of ideas about what to give to God. Things we could give, things we should give to God. But I think, especially in November, I think gratitude is a good place to start. And I know that on Veterans Day, we are meant to give thanks for and the service that the military has rendered to the nation, and that's fine. I am grateful for anyone who wants to serve in any capacity, military or otherwise. But I also think that peace gives us more reasons for gratitude than does war. And I think that peacemakers render a service that is greater and more gratitude, more worthy of gratitude than is the service of individuals whose work involves meting out violence. On the Isle of Iona, you may notice that the call to celebration today comes from the Iona community. It's a place I've visited. I've been on pilgrimage several times. And on that island, there is a memorial to the young men from the island who died in the two world wars. That memorial has 11 names from the First World War and 19 from the Second World War. It's a small number by some standards until you realize that the population on the island of Iona has never been greater than 200 souls. And if we assume that half the inhabitants were males and that most of those males were either too young or too old to fight, then it is likely that those 30 dead represent just about every fighting-age boy on the island during those two world wars. Now, we can give thanks for the service of those boys and young men from Iona. Thanks in part to them. No one sang Deutschland über alles on the Champs-Élysées during the Jazz Age, and European fascism was defeated. But still, how much more reason for gratitude might there have been on Iona if European leaders had decided not to invade each other's countries in the first place? How much falling in love might have happened? How many jovial pints would have been shared down at the pub? How many births and how many birthdays might have been celebrated. How many family meals, how much satisfaction in the work of fishing and shepherding and gardening and homemaking. How many stories told around the fire. How many Presbyterian hymns sung in praise to God. How many cryptically pagan prayers said over the hearth. How many friends welcomed across the threshold. And of course, that's just one small island off the coast of Scotland. And in those wars, millions and millions of people died. How much more Thanksgiving would have filled the world if there had been peace in the first half of the 20th century? How much Thanksgiving and how much joy? I believe Thanksgiving and joy are holy and should therefore be rendered unto the Holy One. It is hard in the absence of war to give thanks for peace. It's a little like giving thanks for the air you breathe. It's a good idea, but who remembers, right? But we should give thanks, and we should live joyfully, and we should do so as an expression of our faith with intention and with imagination. When we gather with loved ones for a meal, we should give thanks for the presence of each one at the table, and we should rejoice in their company. When we walk without fear through wild places or through the energy of a city, we should give thanks for the gift of life and we should rejoice in the living spirit. That is what it means to render unto God the things that belong to God. And we should not render such service to God only for today and only for those living now. We must render joyful thanksgiving to God for generations yet to come by working for peace that is transgenerational, peace that is a gift that we pass on to those yet unborn, so that they will have reasons to give thanks, they will have reasons to rejoice, they will have reasons to render this joyful thanksgiving unto God. In a little while, we will be celebrating the sacrament of Holy Communion, and when you come to the table, I invite you to come remembering, rendering your thanksgiving and giving your joy to the God who gives us life and love, the God who gives us the grace to live together in peace. Amen.